Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Film Buds podcast. This is episode number 46, and my name is Henry.
Braden.
And while Chloe cannot be here today due to, I think, pottery class things, we are joined once again by Cooper Murphy.
Howdy.
So thanks for coming on, man, filling in. Yeah. Appreciate it. And so thanks for joining us. And so first off, we will say very sorry for last week not having the show. Everyone's lives were kind of a mess, and schedules were really just off balance, and so we delayed it one day, then another day, and then we just decided to call it. So we'll try to have that happen as little as possible in the future, but very sorry about that. But we are going to be reviewing both of the films that we were going to do last week, which is Tully, the new Charlize Theron film, and then a retro review of Roman Polanski's Rosemary's Baby from 1968. And also, just happy Mother's Day. We had Mother's Day recently, so I guess that's kind of a little tie-in there. Yeah, and so we are also going to be talking about a few new big trailers, including Spike Lee's Black Klansman, as well as the new Freddie Mercury Queen biopic Bohemian Rhapsody. So, and some other stuff. So thanks for joining us once again. How's everybody?
Doing all right.
Hanging in there.
Yeah.
Things have been hectic.
But. Yeah, can imagine.
Yeah, getting off work early today, coffee shop.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm pretty happy about that. Going to have my afternoon off.
Nice, nice. So, yeah.
I've actually been watching a decent amount of stuff, too. So I'm excited to catch up with what we've been watching later today.
Nice. Only thing with me, I'm just a little under the weather today, so sorry if I'm a little nasally. But other than that, been kind of a stressful work week, but, you know, nothing too crazy. Anything y'all want to mention?
Nothing comes to mind.
No.
No?
Nothing comes to mind.
No.
Yeah, I guess Chloe's usually the one that has fun stuff to talk about.
Animated stories and such, yeah.
But she should be back next week for Deadpool 2, which I think she's very excited about.
Is that already coming out?
Yeah.
Yeah, it took me by surprise as well.
Oh.
I was looking on
the reviews came
Rotten Tomatoes the other day. And oddly enough, this Friday comes out.
Yeah.
Which I completely, that sort of caught me off guard.
Something that I didn't piece together until the other day is Josh Brolin plays both Cable and
Thanos.
And they're both Marvel. But I guess, does Deadpool exist in that Marvel comic universe with the Avengers?
No.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
It's very strange. They mash things up a lot because apparently there was a whole... I mean, what Chloe was talking about when we talked about the third Avengers film, Infinity Wars.
Yeah.
Thanos, his whole reason for wiping out half the universe was to get the attention of this woman, Lady Death. Now, Thanos exists in the Avengers world.
Yeah.
And the X-Men, from what I've always understood, live in a separate sort of world. Sort of different universe, or I don't know, dimension, whatever you want to call it. But, this woman, Lady Death, or Mistress Death, Lady Death, something like that.
Mistress Death.
That,
do they reference her in Infinity Wars? I saw it, by the way.
No, they don't. Not in the film. No, they completely do away with that, which I think is actually a good idea. I think it seems rather crass that he's murdering half the population of the universe to get the attention of a woman. But
things you'll do for love.
Yeah, you don't understand love, Braden. God.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Not the Roxbury. But
she exists, this Lady Death or whatever.
She and Deadpool get together at one point.
Okay.
So I don't know. I mean it's all fiction, obviously, so you can know, I want to do dimensional crossovers, go ahead.
Yeah.
You know. It's their property, they can do with it what they want. But I mean it does get very confusing. But no, they're not supposed to, Deadpool and Thanos are not supposed to exist in the same universe.
Okay. That would be really funny if they incorporated and then Josh Brolin had to play two characters.
Then the other thing about it, which is weird, is that Deadpool actually does end up becoming an Avenger at one point or something.
Really?
Yeah, I mean they just play around with the dimensions and the storylines.
They've been around for so long. It's like, and they have so much liberty with, I mean, because they can just invent any plot device to bring in.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Like there's that whole Marvel Zombies line right. comics yeah, and stuff. Which... And Evil Dead was a part of that. Like, they brought in Ash for Evil Dead. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That should be a movie.
Yeah. I read those in middle school. They're pretty cool, actually. Nice. I totally forgot about
them. Ash versus Avengers or something?
Yeah. It was like him, like, killing, like, Wolverine as a zombie. Like, awesome. No, like, it's really cool. I think it's called... Awesome. I can't remember what it's called, but it's, like, a riff off of Ash versus Army of something. But it's like all the Marvel zombies yeah. and stuff. And
Ash versus Army of Darkness. Well, there's the two Evil Dead films, and Army of Darkness was the third one.
Yeah, you got me in for Christmas.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, through it.
Yeah, good movie. But yeah, I did see Avengers, and I actually liked it. I liked it quite a bit. I didn't like it as much as some of the more recent Marvel films that I've been a fan of, like the Guardians of the Galaxy and Black Panther.
Yeah.
Just because it did kind of feel overstuffed and it's really long.
Yeah. It's a bit over the top. It is long. There's a lot of, perhaps a bit too much CG.
Yeah. And also, like, they're just obviously going to reverse everything that happened at the end of that movie.
Yeah.
Maybe Loki will stay. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
I was about to talk about it. You guys talked about it 2 weeks ago.
But. I was getting into an argument on my Letterboxd comments with someone.
Yeah.
About Avengers. Someone had commented on that on my... Infinity War review, and I was just we're having like a letterboxed comment thread. It's like the lamest thing of all time.
Were they saying that they were gonna keep
almost- I mean and not that they were wrong, but it was just kind of like the true Marvel fan, cinematic universe fan versus
you
know. It's like, I have nothing better to do with my time than on Letterboxd.
Oh, I thought it's kind of smart what they did. They've killed off all the like auxiliary Avengers, and now they just have the core group. Yeah. So I think the next film is going to be kind of leaner. It's just going to focus on the original Avengers.
Well, that's the point. I think that's kind of the point, as they said, people are going to die in this movie. People are going to die in this movie. And like, everybody dies in the movie.
Yeah.
Except the original Avengers. And then, so I think the next film, there's actually going to be something which is going to be more impactful. We've killed off a ton of people, but auxiliary characters.
The thing is with that and separating the two films, it's like we have to wait for the payoffs of the people who died in this one in the next movie.
Right.
But for me, like, usually that would really annoy me. The purpose of this movie is just to set up for another movie. But there's enough like little goofy fun things in there. I like how like Thor's new weapon is like Groot's arm too. Like I thought, like they made another Thor, like, and he was still using Groot's arm. I think that'd be kind of cool. But like, this is little stuff that like made it worth it.
Definitely.
And I did think the end sequence when they're all like kind of dying is actually pretty good. I thought it was pretty well.
There's definitely some good moments.
Yeah. There's something else I wanted to say about it. Doesn't matter though. My mom believes that they're all going to stay dead. And she's like, they're not bringing them back. Like, let's just make one Black Panther and then just never make another one. Just kill him.
Oh, that's what somebody was saying last week is, we know we've already got films for some of these guys in the pipeline. So, we know we've got another Doctor Strange movie. We know we've got another Black Panther movie. I mean, that ruins the whole thing. I don't care. I mean, I know you've got to go into these with just complete suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
It's a friggin' superhero movie.
Yeah.
Right? So there are certain films, again, it's like a bifurcation. It's like a two-track thing. There are the quality films that are supposed to be more human, and then there's like superhero sci-fi fantasy films, totally different tracks. Yeah. People may take issue with this, and I can understand why, and they can argue with me all day, but I'm absolutely not going to change my opinion on this, but they should be judged by different merits.
I agree.
So,
or
using different sort of rubric for what determines the quality of them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. At the same time, I think that films like The Dark Knight complicate that and have maybe changed people's expectations. You should have realigned back to how it was, where it's like judge this type of movie like this type of movie like that. Yeah, Mm-hmm. I agree with you, though. I agree with you.
There are some absolutely quality films out there that do blur that. I mean, the Dark Knight series being one of them. I think Blade Runner also, again, I Blade Runner all the time. But it blurs the lines between sort of a dark human complex inner existence, existential kind of thing, and science fiction, obviously.
Yeah.
And I know that there are other examples out there. I'm trying to think of some right now.
Not, it's not like a big blockbuster, but Ex Machina is something like
Ex Machina, yes. Yeah. Is spectacular. Yeah.
Yeah, but I see what you're saying. A lot of people kind of relegate like sci-fi and fantasy to its own type of
realm. Yeah. Oh, this is a sci-fi film. Yeah. It can't so be judged as this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at it. You know, oh, this is a deep human film. The sci-fi is so minimal in this. It's not even sci-fi at all. Well, so much of it pivots on the, like Ex Machina, so much of it pivots on the significance, the importance of artificial intelligence and so forth. And so,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyhow, I think it still qualifies as science fiction. Anywho.
Should we get into our review of Tully? Yeah.
Or science fiction.
Yes. Yes, definitely. With that done, we can jump into our review of Tully, and we should have a clip, so take a listen.
Okay, I'm going to go upstairs.
Okay.
Watch a movie with Drew.
Okay.
Okay, have fun.
Yeah.
Oh, I can put on headphones if you guys want to make some noise.
Oh, no, we don't. We're good.
Okay. Hey, kiss goodnight. She'll be different in the morning.
That's sweet.
No, she will. She'll grow a little overnight. So will we. Hey, baby. Say goodnight tonight.
All right, so... Up in the air, or not up in the air, we're just talking about Up in the Air. Tully is directed by Jason Reitman and written by Diablo Cody. And it stars Charlize Theron, Mackenzie Davis, Mark Duplass, Ron Livingston, Kitty Crystal. That's about it, I think. And the plot synopsis is a mother of three hires a night nanny to help with her newborn. Diablo Cody has written two other of Jason Reitman's movies, which are Juno and Young Adult. And so they've kind of been a writer-director trio or duo for a while now. And it also had a surprise screening at Sundance this year, but I didn't get a chance to see it. What did y'all think? Braden?
It was a movie? I don't know. I mean, how spoilery do we want to be?
Well, let's do a quick non-spoiler, and then since it's not a huge film, I guess we can just keep on recording and we'll
just indicate when we're
spoil it.
I thought the story was actually pretty interesting. I thought the little, I don't know what you call it, twist, I don't know, again, that's veering dangerously close to spoilery, but I thought that was totally unnecessary. I thought it was frustrating and goofy and silly. But there were, I thought, some very touching moments. I can understand that I'm not a parent myself, but I think it was interesting. I saw some of the parallels about, you know, grappling with middle age and dealing with life and the aging process and maturation and all that kind of thing and how they can wear you down. And the difficulties, the complexities that go along with that, and a lot of the sort of self-reflective anxiety.
And also the realization of what parenting can be.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other thing. And I won't even really comment on that again because I'm not a parent myself. And, you know, I understand that to a certain extent. If anybody throws it, well, you're not a parent, you don't know shit at me, I'm going to smack them straight.
Please, go for it, Brent.
But... You know, just because I have not decided to spray my DNA all over somebody.
It's time to spray my DNA, ladies.
The birds and the bees, Brady. Yeah. I think you have a misunderstanding about this.
No, I
don't. Plug into the DNA hose and spray.
Tell that to Mary. See if she takes it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, I'll jump in. I mean, I actually like the movie a good bit. I mean, I love Young Adult. Mm-hmm. I really like Diablo Cody's writing voice for the most part. I did really like Juno upon first viewing. And I mean, while I still like it, it is one of those movies that feels almost a little too written at times. Mm-hmm. But I do love Young Adult, just kind of brutally honest. And it's almost like the comedy of The Office, but in kind of the arms of Charlize Theron, you know?
I've heard it's pretty good. I haven't seen Young Adult myself. Juno, I didn't much care for. I really liked J.K. Simmons. I really liked Jennifer Garner as the parents.
Yeah.
But Ellen Page and Michael Cera were just kind of...
Yeah.
I will say, Reitman and Diablo Cody, they seem to get really good performances. The script, the direction seem to get really good performances out of people. Because Charlize Theron...
She's amazing.
And... Ron Livingston and this in particular, I thought were really good. Mackenzie Davis as well was also really good, but Charlize Theron I thought was outstanding.
Yeah,
and so. she's fantastic in Young Adult as well.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, and that film is very like just kind of brutally awkward because it's about this woman who's really kind of damaged emotionally, and she is kind of like the Michael Scott version of that story where she just says everything she's feeling and. Has no filter, really. But this one I did actually like a lot as well. I just liked, again, its honesty about... And now, I'm not a parent either, but at least having been raised by a parent and having kind of... Even just working at Joe Van Gogh, seeing so many parents with kids go through every single day, kind of the realization of, like, well, of course, parenting is, I'm sure, a wonderful thing. At times, it's can be... terrible. It's, you know, exhausting. It's aggravating, you know, everything under the sun. But again, it's also can be, I'm sure, a magical thing to be a parent. And so this one really doesn't hold back in showing that. And I know that I read an interview with Diablo Cody and said she's a mother of three. And so at least she has some clear experience about what that can be. And I would say even this movie, I don't know exactly what they're really intending. It almost shows like Charlize Theron has a almost like a mental illness in a way. She's like just so far gone in a way at times. And I mean, I know it's dealing with postpartum depression as well. I don't know how accurate that is, but just showing a person having to deal with three children on her own, I felt was realistic. And
well, that's an interesting thing was about riveting. She wasn't really dealing with it on her. She had a husband, and the husband was actually a good guy.
Yeah.
And granted, he had a job, and he was trying to move his career forward, and so he was not as present, obviously, as the mother. But I mean, he was there. He was present. He spent time. He helped the children with homework. So it's not as though he was sort of like a 1950s or 1960s father,
where
he
would come home,
sit down with the Tom Collins, watch the news. Maybe pop a kid on the butt for acting out and then go to sleep, you know? So he was actually present. He, you know, he made lunches with, he did homework with the kids. He tried to help. But I mean, even so, because he was still very much focused on his career and in trying to improve not just his situation, but his family situation as well. I think it was interesting that Diablo Cody did that because, you know, as edgy, progressive, I don't know, as a lot of her characters are, it's very interesting that all these people seem to sort of set into very traditional roles within the household. Mm-hmm. And so you've got a mother who is obviously very intelligent, could have her own career, but she is at home with the children. She's a homemaker. And I think that, you know, that's by choice. And so, but then you have the husband who's pushing his career. And so it's still interesting how they fall into these very traditional sort of roles within this household.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, I think it's, in a way, it's interesting in how they do it. With that said, how someone in a relationship or two parents, it's the one can be perfectly fine and be helpful, and the other one can be maybe seemingly okay, but actually kind of struggling, especially like the mother who had just, you know, been raising the kids and maybe dealing with postpartum depression and
I think other that things was, as well. Yeah, I think that's what Diablo Cody was trying to convey is the fact that even if you have a good marriage and your spouse is a spectacular person who's actually there and present and helping the children and a good husband / wife, if you're home and you're taking care of those children, it's still
a lot.
Incredibly traumatic just because it's so exhausting.
Yeah.
And I mean, kids, sometimes they have, you know, little glimmers of brilliance and joy and all these kinds of things. But a lot of times it's screaming and poop and messes and things that generally you know, as an adult, you'd rather not have to deal with.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. I mean, and she does a very good job of showing how difficult motherhood is.
Yeah.
And that this is not something that should be taken for granted, that mothers obviously are important and should be treasured for everything that they do. Mm. That being said, you know, I try to let my mom know, Mom, if you're listening, thank you.
Yeah.
But I nailed Mother's Day this year.
Oh, mine did too.
Yay. Yeah, I saw Avengers with my mom. She was very
nice. That's a good one.
She loves it. I mean, this is the second time she saw it, too.
Really?
She,
oh, really?
She, wow. My mom is a big, big Marvel fan.
Really?
My mom is the opposite.
My parents are so very anti-Marvel. It's not even funny. But yeah.
She's like, Marvel? Is that the same as DC? What's this other one?
Well, my mom is one of those people that has a movie pass and literally goes to a movie probably every day.
She should use it while she can because they're about to go bankrupt.
Yeah, believe it.
And why? I guess since Cooper, you didn't get a chance to see it, but you had like the whole movie spoiled for you.
Yeah,
but by the time when you were working it, oh, sorry, sorry, sorry. Some random phone number's calling me.
Okay,
little American idiot.
All right,
they tie in there. I guess we could, since there is saying a twist is, I don't know again if that is the right way to put it, but. If you don't want to have Tully spoiled for you, you can just look, check in the show notes.
Stick your fingers in your ears right now.
Yeah.
Say la 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 for the next 10 minutes.
Yeah, and just move on to the Rosemary's Baby section. But spoilers now for Tully. Well, Cooper, did you want to, since you haven't said much, you want
to... The sad reality of working in a movie theater is people just assume that you see every movie that comes in. The other night I was working my shift in a group of about 5 elderly, probably more. There's probably about 10 of them, actually, because it's like this big movie group that comes sometimes. They went to go see Tully and just came out in the lobby and beat for beat spoiled the whole entire movie, including the twist, which was funny because half of the group didn't even realize there was a twist, which, granted, I didn't see the movie, but it seems more than evidently clear.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. It's not really, I mean, it's a twist, but it's not a twist. You kind of go, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's like... I mean, the way I put it is it's M. Night Shyamalan presents Motherhood.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so. I guess we'll say, so it's the Tully character played by Mackenzie Davis is a younger version of Charlize Theron.
Marlo.
Yeah.
Her character.
Yeah, Marlo. Yeah. Who comes to help her deal with
her essentially life. It's like split personality disorder, but not exactly.
Yeah.
It's sort of this strange dissociative thing.
Yeah.
Where she just... Because she's so exhausted and she wants to push through the difficult period. And I don't know if it's necessarily postpartum depression or some other sort of strange dissociative
mania.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, mania or something. But she pushes herself to do all these things and she splits her personality in such a way that it's like...
Well, I would actually say, I mean, I've even I read some reviews of it afterwards. I don't even know if you're supposed to take her character literally. I've seen a lot of people say it's a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I don't even know if you would have to say that she's imagining this. It's just kind of a fantastical dream in a way.
Well, my question is the movie designed in such a way that, like, it would be believable that she's, like, projecting this character? Or, like, for example, is there scenes with, like, her, Tully, and then, like, her husband all talking and stuff like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, so
there's a sex scene, in fact.
Oh, okay.
Which is...
So, I guess at that point, you just have to assume that it's,
like a foreplay scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's almost in the way that Steven Spielberg's The BFG almost plays like a dream, which, obviously, that is much more fantastical, but it's, like... Clearly, she's not running off with a giant and then meeting the Queen of England and all this stuff. And this, it's while it is presented in much more of a grounded reality, I feel like it's almost, you're just meant to see it as almost like a fairy tale dream kind of wish fulfillment, having someone, or I mean, and just the idea of a younger version of you being able to like come in and help you, or saying like, oh yeah, I do want that life, but then also... exhaust or kind of hard to deal with when you actually get it, you know.
Well, like, I mean, that was the whole thing at the end with their night out in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have the conversation, and the older version, I mean, this is, again, this is something I'm with. The older version is saying how much she misses a younger version of herself and sort of this worldly wisdom, and she could have all these higher thoughts because she didn't have to deal with sort of the day-to-day grind. And so she had all these big thoughts, and she had this sort of worldly tantric wisdom thing going on, and all the, she could think about existential thoughts and all this kind of stuff. And then the younger version was saying how much she admires the older version because she has to deal with trauma, with the travails of family life, but there's stability, there's security. There is, underneath all the poop and the screaming and the messes and all of that, there's still love. Mm. And that's something that everybody in some way, shape, or form is looking for somehow.
Yeah.
At least most sane, stable people. I don't know. It's difficult to say. I don't know that it's necessarily a fairy tale, because magical realism would be, you know, the notion that when she's going through this, she has like the younger version of her splits off from her and then walks around and does things independently of her.
Mm-hmm.
But I get the impression that, I mean, and they go through the whole thing. It's not some sort of fairy tale thing. It's
right.
When they're in the hospital, they say your wife is exhausted. She's showing signs of sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
Which is, again, obviously, that's the dissociative split personality, whatever it is exactly. Obviously, I'm not a psychiatrist or psychologist, so I don't know mania, hypomania. I don't know what exactly the diagnosis would be. But, I mean, she was suffering from some sort of clinical.
Oh, definitely.
Mental health.
Definitely.
Issue. It's not a fairy tale.
I'm not saying it is a fairy tale. It's presented almost in the way she sees it as a fairy tale, as like this wish fulfillment.
Yeah.
Okay. Idea. I'm not saying this is
okay.
Yeah. Cut and dry fairy tale.
Misunderstanding something. Yeah.
Again, but so. I just, in terms of like you being able to have someone, like if a single mother or someone being able to like wish they could have someone come into their life. Help them. There's a recycling truck. Kind of like just disappear. You know, it's just that idea of having this a secret elf helper, like a Santa's helper type person to help you with your struggles of your life. You know,
well, isn't that what au pairs or nannies or
yeah? Or but child, I mean, in terms of it, in terms of the twist and how it's actually herself, and so she knows herself.
Yeah,
you know. But I mean, I like that angle of it.
But you didn't like that. Like, you felt cheap?
I don't know. I mean, I'm still trying to come to grasps with what... I mean, it's like, have children go insane.
Yeah. Yeah, what is the message? That's what I'm curious. At the end, like...
I don't know.
Have all the kids in her arms. I mean, she... Like, love you guys. Or, like...
She's a good mother. Her husband is a good husband and father. Yeah. And yet, she still has this...
Well, I mean...
Break from. I don't know. I'm not sure what the message. I don't know if there is a message other than motherhood is tough and should not be.
Well, I mean, I'd granted, say even if from the outside, a mother who goes out with her kids can be seem perfectly fine. Sometimes when she's at home, or just any parent can be struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there's people who have come through, mothers who have single mothers who have come through with kids who have talked to me and some of the other baristas just about their lives. You know, they have like three kids, all who they're dealing with by themselves. And while they can seem happy, you can tell at times they're kind of
tired,
suffocating. Yeah. Yeah. You know, just because they have to deal with all this screaming while dealing with their lives as well. And so I think it's just presenting at least a somewhat realistic portrayal of what parenting or any complex situation can be.
Yeah.
You know.
My mom is really pushing me to see this movie because my mom is a single mom, raised three boys, and was like, and had a career too on top of it. So she was like working, you know, 40, sometimes 50, 60 hours a week.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she really liked it and stuff. She said that it was pretty accurate and just, I mean, my mom is far from perfect, but she said just in terms of like her mental breakdown in the movie type of thing, like she's like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, for most of my life and my brother's life, it was just my mother. I mean, I can, especially since I live with her and I've seen the entire kind of arc, I guess you can say. But yeah, so I mean, I don't know if it's saying one thing or the other. It's just presenting a slice of life.
Yeah.
Darker or however you want to put it. But
yeah.
I did really like Charlize Theron, really liked Mackenzie Davis.
Mm-hmm.
like some of the dark humor in it. Same thing with young adult. And with Jason Reitman, I think for the most part, I think he kind of needs good material to make good films. Because if you have either of you seen Labor Day,
no.
It's pretty bad.
Well, I heard, what was it, Men, Women, and Children?
Yeah.
Is that the one Adam Sandler that he did about social media?
Yeah, that one's not great either. I heard
that was pretty awful.
And actually, brought up Labor Day, because that one is almost like a fairy tale reality, almost like this, although it's done much, much worse.
Really?
And so I think it's good he and Diablo Cody have this partnership, as well as Up in the Air was, but that was a book. So I guess, so I think he needs good material, but he can make very good films if he's headed down the right path, I think, or has the right stuff to work with. But it's one of the more entertaining and interesting movies I've seen. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, cool. Brandon, anything else you want
to... No, I don't know. I mean, I'm still... I get the point.
Oh, no, it's just some weird car, like, backing up.
I kind of understand the point of the mental break that Charlize Theron's character, Marlo, has.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of a response, a psychological response to the trauma of her context, you know, as a mother of three, struggling to deal with this in this postpartum period. I don't know. I mean, it still feels very strange, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is, I mean, it's sort of this psychological break. Is it belittling of the mental fortitude of these mothers who deal with these things and don't have these sort of dissociative episodes? Or is Diablo Cody simply trying to express a lot of the anxiety, the doubt, the self-doubt that goes along with motherhood? Because while you have these children, you're also struggling with your own personal fears, anxieties, whatever it is about...
Right.
Growing up, and all of a sudden you're not the child anymore. All of a sudden you have to be an adult. I don't know. I mean, I kind of get it, but it still feels in a way you can do that without having to have this little M. Night Shyamalan twist, right?
Yeah.
Like in trying to display the strength of motherhood and the fortitude of these women who do this, that they have this mental break thing. I don't know.
I mean, I think it's just bringing up that idea of, it's almost like a cliche of someone being older and saying, man, I wish I could have known not to do this when I was 25.
If I'd been able to talk to myself, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, like, you know, someone
back in time, like, yada, yada, yada.
You know, someone who wants to be a Wall Street broker, like, you know, like, oh, I want the money. I want that lavish life. And then when you get there, it's a little different, or can be, or I would think it would be. And so it's just that kind of idea of looking back at your life and or looking forward and just wishing you could know things one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, you want to give star ratings?
I don't know. This is a tough one for me because I keep vacillating between 3.5 and 4. Because, I mean, I really like some of the dialogue. I really liked the performances.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the direction overall was really good. I liked the use of lighting, and nothing felt overly sort of like bright and beautiful, which I think fed into the trauma, the difficulty, the complexity of her situation. And so there were a lot of technical things that I thought were very good, but the crux of the story, the whole twist thing, in a way, I'm finding it difficult to reconcile with the whole intent of the film. So I don't know. I keep vacillating with 3.5. I'll go 3.75 stars. I don't know.
3.75. Yeah, I'm kind of between 4 and 4.5. I'll go 4.25.
4.25. Okay.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, cool.
So it averages out to 4.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that done, we can move on to a retro review of Roman Polanski's Rosemary's Baby. And we have a clip for that one, so take a listen.
What time did I go to sleep?
You didn't go to sleep. You passed out. From now on, you get cocktails or wine, not cocktails and wine, huh?
The dreams I had.
Don't yell. I already filed them down. I didn't want to miss baby night.
You...
And a couple of my nails were ragged, and it was kind of fun in a necrophile sort of way.
I dreamed someone was raping me. I don't know, someone inhuman.
Thanks a lot. What's the matter?
Nothing.
I didn't want to miss the night.
We could have done it this morning or tonight. Last night wasn't the only split second.
Oh, I was a little bit loaded myself, you know.
Rosemary's Baby is directed by Roman Polanski, was released in 1968, and stars Mia Farrow, John Cassavetes, Ruth Gordon, Sidney Blackmer, Maurice Evans. Anyone else y'all think of?
No.
And the synopsis is, a young couple moves into an apartment only to be surrounded by peculiar neighbors and occurrences. When the wife becomes mysteriously pregnant, paranoia over the safety of her unborn child begins to control her life. So this one...
That's weird. Okay.
Good? Yeah, sorry. Brain's having some headphone.
It cut out again, and then you move the back on your laptop, and it would boop and pop right back in.
I don't know.
That was very strange.
Technology at its finest, you know.
Yeah.
So this one's, I guess, considered to be a bit of a classic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in the Criterion Collection, and definitely a kind of a signature mark in the horror genre, I would say. I guess, and probably Roman Polanski's most well-known as well. Well, Cooper, jump in since you didn't have...
So I like the tie-in with Mother Neuroses. I guess this is probably a little more extreme than Tully, considering she's giving birth to the child of Satan.
Yeah.
But I've never seen it before, but it's such a like popular and such a huge movie that I don't know how it flew under my radar, but I loved it. I thought that the performances by Mia Farrow and John Cassavetes were just so, so good. Like, I am like obsessed with John Cassavetes now. Like, I'm very excited for the Criterion sale next month.
Oh, yeah.
I'll pick up a box set of his.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought that the only other Roman Polanski movie I've seen is Knife in the Water, which both movies are kind of driven by suspense. But I feel that this is just pays off so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And it is definitely more of a, I don't know, typical like Hollywood type of movie where, you know, it culminates in this like, you know, pretty in a pretty extreme fashion. But,
yeah.
You know, we've talked about horror on the podcast before, and I, like, this is the type of horror that I love where it's all in your head and, you know, you're doubting it along with the character and there's, like, restraint shown. Like, really, up until the end, there's only one really horrific scene, and it's, the blood orgy scene. But even that is pretty, you're just seeing, like, limbs and stuff like that, and I don't know. It's really been sticking with me the past couple days. And just there's so many memorable scenes, so many memorable performances. And just the music,
the
too,
score the, is the score.
The
is
lullaby. So, oh my God.
The score is very good. Yeah.
Have
you not seen Macbeth, his version of Macbeth?
No.
Oh, it's good. It's on Criterion too.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out. But yeah, I just thought that it's the way that they, you know, they drop little hints throughout the movie. I thought really good use of foreshadowing, like with the closet stuff. And, you know, the one thing I guess maybe, I'm not even knocking it because I like their characters, but the neighbors were kind of cartoony.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of obnoxious and stuff.
That's what ruined the whole thing for me, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't go bananas over this film the way that most everybody I know does. Mary loves it. You both seem to adore it.
Yeah.
I watched it. I just kind of went.
Really? The tongue out?
Didn't do anything for me.
The tongue out, man.
Damn.
Mia Farrow was just, what is going on? I don't know. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but she played it well.
I'd say the whole film was pretty over the top, you know?
And John Cassavetes was so stereotypical. Hey, baby, what?
I was just such. He plays a perfect sleazeball.
Yeah.
And just the way he, like, oh my God, just the way he kind of moves.
And then
moves
the neighbors,
around.
you've got the guy who's this sort of, he strikes me as this very over the top, sort of classically trained actor. And then his wife, Ruth Gordon, who I guess you won an Academy Award for this, but the whole time it was sort of like it's very theatrical. Really bad Long Island impression.
It's, I mean,
hey, how you doing there? Hey,
I mean,
it's, oh, did I tell you about my neighbor across the way?
Yeah, oh, that's what I like that stuff.
I mean, it's so like everybody, all the characters in it were just caricatures. They weren't actually. I never felt like they were real people. They were all.
But
just
but does it need to be? If she gives birth to Satan, I mean, it's yeah, not, like same thing with in Mother. Actually, it's actually similar to Mother, I would say.
I mean, maybe there was some message I was missing, but you know, oh, she has Satan's baby, and then they have the big powwow, the big get together.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a baby shower for Satan's baby, and then they all, and it's like all the people who are Satanists. There's nothing really. I guess they were all supposed to be like ancient witches or something like that, but yeah. It was like a woman who looks like a dumpy middle-aged housewife from like
that's what's funny about it,
like Ohio or Pennsylvania or something.
It has this
right?
like 60s like glitzy tackiness.
Yeah,
to it
that, yeah,
like I love that shit.
And then,
yeah.
You know, they're rocking the cradle, and then they've got the weird Japanese guy with the camera. What the hell?
Yeah,
is that?
No, it's great. I thought that
I seriously must have been missing some sort of subtext there, because I mean, I just didn't get it. It's like, you know. And then the Greek guy shows up. He's like, hey, I'm a sexy Greek guy. Where's Satan's baby? And they go, there's Satan's baby. Oh, this is wonderful. I'm a sexy Greek guy. I mean, I was missing something. I was missing some sort of subtext. Go watch Repulsion. That's what Roman Polanski can do.
Repulsion, I think that maybe
is spectacular.
Brand new hate cinema.
I do. Repulsion is spectacular. That is suspenseful. That you never really know what actually is going on. Rosemary's Baby, you watch and you kind of go.
But I'd say the different films, different types of films.
How I mean, so?
This is over the top. This is very theatrical. This is like, it feels like an episode of The Twilight Zone. It's just done really, really, really well.
It's just kind of a strange. Okay, I can see that. Strange mood piece almost. Whereas Repulsion is more of a psychological, more complex film, I would say. You know, whereas this is more just
a tonal
mood exercise similar to, I guess we were talking about.
Well, I guess that's what it, I mean, because Repulsion, you actually feel you yourself suffer through, go through the anxiety, your psyche frays along with the main character played by, I believe, Bridget Bardot? Who is the main character? I'm going to have to...
Mia Farrow?
No, it's not Mia Farrow. It's a French
actress. Catherine...
Catherine Deneuve. Thank you. Catherine Deneuve.
Yeah.
She's spectacular in that.
Oh, yeah. She's good.
She's absolutely spectacular in that. I mean, just her portrayal. And it feels much more complex and nuanced. And I guess this one's supposed to be... I guess it's intentionally a little more campy.
Yeah.
I would definitely say so. Hollywood-y or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's watching Repulsion and then that being sort of the touchstone, the benchmark for Roman Polanski films, and then watching Rosemary's Baby, which everybody just goes bananas for. And then I watched it and I kind of went, it doesn't really affect me the way that Repulsion. I mean, Repulsion, I watched that by myself in my apartment when I was down in Athens for grad school.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's seriously, after about 15, 20 minutes into the film, I seriously was like freaked out. Like, no, I'm not joking. I mean, I was, I don't know, 35, 36 at the time, and I was kind of going, oh my God. I was running around my own apartment, turning on all the lights, looking in the closet.
Did this come out post or pre?
Pre.
I believe pre.
I'm gonna look that up quickly on IMDb. Because
this was 68.
68.
It was 68 for Rosemary's Baby. Yeah. So.
But Cooper, go on.
Like I was saying before, like I'm a huge fan of The Twilight Zone, and there's a lot of like dud episodes of The Twilight Zone, but I like still like watching it, even the ones that aren't great.
I mean, similar to like The X-Files, like there's some good and there's some not so good ones.
Yeah, and I feel like you could slot this into a Twilight Zone, like this could be a Twilight Zone episode, and it would be the best Twilight Zone episode.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, Mia Farrow kind of plays this like doting wife that's like just confused and stuff. But like, I just thought that just how like gross she got throughout the movie. She was so sickly looking, and like, pallid and nasty. And I don't know. I just like just something about
haircut.
Her. And that haircut didn't help. Yeah. And you can see the sweat all over.
I mean, short hair is one thing, but I mean, that looks like a haircut you'd give a 5-year-old boy.
Yeah, and she had like her skin was like mayonnaise. Yeah. I don't know. I just thought, oh god.
Yeah. And like, and also, in terms of the setting, it kind of reminds me of The Shining a little bit. That hotel and then this apartment.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the different characters.
What I like that it was just set in bustling New York City.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like, I really like horror movies that are like set outside the classical horror settings. You know, like it's not in a cabin. It's not, you know, a spooky hospital or something. It's like in this like nice upper class, like upper Manhattan apartment. And just like the scenes when she's like kind of just walking through the streets and she's manic and stuff. And it's just New York City like you've seen it a million times in other movies, but it just has this like different context.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm a huge fan of just, the tackiness of the 60s that is just like oozing throughout that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel like I feel like I haven't... A lot of movies I watch from the 60s are not from the United States, I feel like. So a lot of times when I see that like... When a movie has that 60s vibe, it's like... It's not like based in the heart of the United States.
Yeah,
so that's kind of cool to see all that. Yeah, I just think it holds up really well. Like my girlfriend, who's not really a big film buff type of person, I mean, she was glued to it too. Like she was like, she really loved it.
Wow. That's cool.
And she's kind of like Chloe too, where she has a hard time separating the artist from the art.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she knows. I mean, everyone knows how horrible Roman Polanski is, but it didn't prevent her from liking the movie. So I don't know. I think it holds up so well.
Yeah.
50 years later. So
yeah, and of course
it is 50 years.
Yeah. I guess it is.
Yeah. What do you have to say about?
Well, I mean, I like the movie a good bit. I haven't seen a ton of Roman Polanski stuff. I probably like this as much as Repulsion, and then the Macbeth adaptation is also quite good. But there's still a lot of his films that I haven't seen. But I do like this. I've praised them before, but I just do like these kind of strange mood pieces. And actually, going back to Mother, if you look at one of the posters for Mother, it's actually almost like a...
Really?
Like yeah.
The face looking upward.
Yeah. And it's similar to that film where she's just constantly second-guessing herself. Like, you know, in Mother, when she sees the little clump of, like, blood flushed down the toilet.
Yeah.
Or these just strange images. And it constantly makes her psychologically... second guess herself. It's just things like that that are just interesting. It may not mean anything all the time, but it's just unsettling.
Yeah.
And interesting. And also, like the score is so good. Like I was trying to find some good intro and outro pieces, and I hadn't listened to the score in a while, and it's so good.
Yeah, just the flutes and stuff. And like, there's a scene where her and her husband are walking down the street together, and he's like angry at her. And this is like when she's like full blown, like going kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And like beginning of the movie, there's a lot of like gentle flutes and stuff. And this scene, it's just like a flute going crazy. Like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I definitely like it a lot. Wouldn't be necessarily like my favorite kind of early horror classic film, but definitely am a big fan of it.
I think it'd be up there for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to buy the Criterion Blu-ray when I get a chance.
Yeah.
Because I just, a coworker wanted to me, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like Mia Farrow a lot. What's the other big thing she was in? Brayden, wasn't Mia Farrow in something, other thing really iconic?
It's not coming to mind right now.
Oh, I guess she was in that Great Gatsby adaptation, but that wasn't very good.
No Great Gatsby adaptation has ever been really good, so.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. Anyhow, yeah, but I do really like the relationship between her and her husband. And I really like, again, the over-the-top people, that just these weird, annoying people.
The tannish robe. You gotta have some tannish robe.
Yeah, and I, of course, like, the third act is awesome.
Yeah.
Just how it all plays out, and it's... And that kind of classic scene where she's like...
Yeah.
You know, then the camera is kind of going wild in the score and everything. I love that.
Yeah.
And of course, there are other films that have that similar style that don't always work, but for whatever reason, this works.
Yeah.
Maybe just because it was one of the first to really go for it like that. But
well, I mean, she's been in a ton of Woody Allen films.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Just briefly, the chronology. Knife in the Water was 1962. I don't remember if that was his first film or not. It may have been.
It was.
Repulsion was 1965, so that was his second film.
Okay.
And then Rosemary's Baby was 1968.
Okay.
I don't know if anything came between Repulsion and Rosemary's Baby. I don't think so.
Yeah.
But, Mia Farrow's been Rosemary's Baby, Crimes and Misdemeanors, Purple Rose of Cairo, Hannah and Her Sisters. Well, she's in one of the Documentary Now films.
Really?
Yeah. That's funny.
I think that the film definitely has some, like, goofiness to it and, like, can have you kind of chuckling. But I do think it is pretty unsettling. Like, yeah. Nonetheless, like, especially someone that's like, granted, I'm not going to get pregnant because I physically can't get pregnant, yeah. But I am a hypochondriac that is one of those people that, like, needs so many second opinions from doctors and stuff like that. Yeah. And, like, once that, like, seed is planted in my mind, I'm, like, so neurotic with that type of stuff. So, like, I definitely see the horror.
Relate.
Yeah, knowing, yeah.
Yeah.
And just that, yeah, the scene early in the movie when she's, like, impregnated, I think it's so good. Like, I think that...
That weird dream sequence?
Yeah.
Thing? Yeah. I mean, because she talks about the...
Very disjointed and strange.
Well, it's a dream, Brain.
Yeah.
Brain has very linear...
No, it just... there are dream sequences that are done well, yeah. That you don't know. Again, Repulsion.
It's a good dream sequence. Though.
Not really, but that's the point. Is you if you can't differentiate between reality and dream sequence, what you're seeing is the viewer and what the character is seeing, himself, herself, and you're having difficulty differentiating between those things. Again, it freaked me out to the point that I was running around the apartment turning on lights and looking in closets. That's a good dream sequence.
Yeah.
What he did with this was just like, oh, there's a guy on a boat and she's walking naked, and then there's the devil. And it was just it was just some sort of weird, like...
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't, like, laying awake in my bed at night freaking out over anything. But I thought it was well done.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the idea of dreams. Almost like how some Terrence Malick movies are, where it's just... It's so fragmented,
mm-hmm.
You know? And everything is kind of all... You may remember weird, small things about it. Yeah. But then other things may be really dragged out.
Yeah, yeah. Something, too, about the dream sequence. Like, it comes about 30 minutes into the movie or something like that. And up until that point, it could have just been any other domestic drama or, like, romantic comedy from the 60s or something. Like, up until that point. Like, if you just sat down and watched this movie, didn't even know the title of it, didn't know the premise of the movie. And it just seems like this couple that are coming, like, there is no horror up until that point.
Yeah.
And that's when it starts. Yeah. And I like that there is that, you know, restraint. You know, where it just feels like, oh, just, what is this movie about? Just mm-hmm. this couple moving in an apartment, like... Like, yeah. You think that maybe it's going to be a movie where, like, oh, like, they'll have marital problems. I mean, they do have marital problems.
Yeah. But, and again, I mean, I...
But then there's this fucked up blood orgy.
Yeah. Know? And I always hate bringing it up. But again, with Mother, that's the same thing. You can start watching. It's like, oh, there's this weird couple moves in for a few days.
Yeah.
And it's seemingly fine. And then it just kind of all goes to hell. But yeah, and where she's talking about, she's in bed and she's talking to her husband and she's completely out of it. She's like, yeah, I had this dream where I was raped.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, yeah, well, I did it to you while you were sleeping.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh, wait, you were right.
Yeah, and even when she's just saying that, it's just like, God, that's, like, what a horrible thing for a person to dream.
Yeah.
You know, man or woman.
Yeah.
You know, it would be just unsettling, things like that, but it's a cool one.
Yeah, for sure.
Does Charlie like it? My
manager? Oh, he loves it.
He does, yeah. He owns it, so obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, he really loves it. Because that's, like, and that's, like, right up his alley, too.
Yeah, definitely.
He really loves, like... 60s, like,
yeah, he
very American feeling, you know, films.
Yeah, he's just like a 60s, 70s cinema guy for sure. Anything else?
No. I still say we should have done Aliens as the other film.
That would be
Motherhood on two levels.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, we should do Aliens or Alien, either or.
Yeah. Oh, I'd be down for
that. Well, Aliens is more of the motherhood thing. You have the queen alien, and then on top of that, you have Ripley and her relationship with Newt. But
that's just
me.
We could just let's just do all of it.
Let's just do all the Aliens.
All through. I've never seen
three.
So. Three, the director's cut is pretty good. Still a little flawed, but.
Yeah,
I actually like three because again,
yeah.
Well, I won't go into that, but I like three. I'll just say
four
was an absolute travesty. One was amazing. Two was fun, but in a different way.
I like Alien over Aliens.
Yes,
same.
Yeah. Anywho,
both are good though.
Yeah, we should have done Aliens for the motherhood theme, but that's just me.
We can do it. We can do it soon as well. So
I mean, man, it was weird watching these two films because Tully is like a giant advertisement for birth control. Right? It really is.
Sure.
And this one, you know, does it for
motherhood. Motherhood is difficult and complex, so make sure you think about things before you do it. Make sure you want to be pregnant and have a child, you know?
Yeah.
And then you watch Rosemary's Baby, and it's like, anti-abortion. You can have the devil's baby, and you'll still love it.
Yeah,
get raped by the devil. Have the devil's baby.
The end.
It's great. You'll love the baby anyways. But you know.
I love the end when she... is rocking the cradle and she starts to smile.
Like, and she just walks up and she's just...
I love like that.
It's like you should love your baby no matter what.
Yeah.
You
know? And John Cassavetes is like, we could have another. We could try again. We can have a pool.
This one was a dud. We'll try again.
I'd like to think they should make a sequel where Rosemary's baby's like 3 and they're having another kid at this point.
There actually is a sequel.
Apparently, it's just on like on YouTube. Mm-hmm. That's what Will said, at least.
No, there is a sequel to it. I don't know. I don't know if it was an actual sequel or if it's like one of those horrible fan-made films.
I'm sure Roman Plaza had fucking nothing to do.
I think they're actually, I'm gonna look at that now and
find out, but he's like in kindergarten and he's like spitting.
I know Roman Polanski didn't do it.
Definitely.
I'm curious what the book is like that this is based on.
So star ratings, I think I go 4.5.
Yeah, same. 4.5.
Three. Ooh, brutal.
You know, teach your own.
Yeah.
We're not going to judge anyone on this podcast.
I'm sure for Chloe it would be like negative 5 billion. So.
Yeah.
3 is good for comparing.
So. Negative 28 cloven hooves.
Yeah, seriously.
Got to add it to my letterbox.
Oh, yeah.
I'll do it later.
Okay, well, I guess with the reviews done, we can move on to a little bit of news. So a few cool trailers came out in just the last few days. So I guess the first one we can talk about is Spike Lee's, I don't know what you would call it, a racial buddy cop something that just premiered at the Cannes Film Festival called Black Klansman. And so this one is about a black, I guess he's a detective, of like rookie detective who comes in, and I mean it's hard to even describe. What would you say?
He is a rookie detective who's brought onto this case, take down the KKK from the inside.
Yeah.
And he makes contact with David Duke, the actual, he's dead now, right?
I think
that, or he's decrepit, but at one point, or still is, the Grand Wizard of the KKK, played by Topher Grace, which is really funny.
It's ridiculous.
He sends in his partner, who's played by Adam Driver, who looks awesome in this movie. Yeah. I love Adam Driver and everything.
Yeah,
he's like my favorite new actor.
Yeah,
I guess he's not even new anymore. But to infiltrate the KKK, and he's Jewish. It's them trying to take down the KKK from the inside. It looks pretty comedic, but at the same time, you could tell that it probably is. I mean, it is very serious subject matter.
I mean, I guess it makes the point of the black detective is like talking to the KKK guys, like, "Yep, I hate blacks.
Oh yeah,
I hate Jews. All these different races and cultures and ethnic groups and
to like gain his trust."
While he is black at the same time, Adam Driver plays the quote unquote real version of the black detective and infiltrates the it got glowing reviews at Cannes, and so it looks like it's going to be a very interesting and very timely
film. Well, that's the thing that got me about it is it deals with a very important, very pertinent subject, a very timely subject, and it does it in a way that I think is true to the source material, but makes it presents a very difficult subject in a way that it's more readily accessible rather than getting in my face and
you know, preaching
this is bad preaching. I mean Spike Lee when he does good work,
it's good,
it's superlative. Do the Right Thing is amazing.
Inside Man,
Jungle Fever.
And I actually really liked Chirac or Chirac.
I need to see that.
It's like, I think it's kind of divisive. It's so theatrical and over the top that I think it could easily rub people the wrong way. But I really loved it. So
I thought it was interesting, too, in the trailer that they're bringing in like the rhetoric. I know we talk about Donald Trump, at least since I've been on, we've talked about it a couple times.
But he comes up once or twice.
They don't say make, like the Klan members in the trailer don't essentially say we're making America great again, but they say something that's pretty much that. Like they bring in like the patriotism and like the rhetoric of Trump and attach it to the Klansmen, and it's like obviously very intentional. So
yeah, apparently it got a 10-minute standing ovation when it premiered.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And then also Spike Lee himself, when he was at the press panel, attacked Trump. Clearly, definitely poking at him. But yeah, that one comes out in what, August, was it?
Yeah, I think beginning of August. So.
Yeah, so that one will be definitely an interesting one to watch.
I'll be gone by then. I'll be watching in a different time zone.
So definitely keep an eye out for that one. And then, so the other one, I mean, there were a few over the last couple of weeks, but...
Oh, I didn't watch the... The new Lars von Trier trailer.
Oh, I haven't watched that.
That also premiered at Cannes. People walked out, but also gave an ovation. All I know is I saw tweets like, I don't care what it is. When you shoot a kid in a movie, it's not art or something.
Yeah.
Of course, Lars von Trier is.
Apparently, there's violence against women and children.
Yeah, what a surprise.
But then it's been getting glowing reviews for its commentary on...
Yeah.
I'm not even sure exactly what it is. It's Lars von Trier.
Being Lars von Trier.
Yes. But
take it or leave it, I guess. I'm more of a leave it type of person.
I haven't seen much by him. I tried watching Nymphomaniac and found it completely unwatchable.
Yeah, he's
not just because it was a rough film. The subject matter is rough, but it's... I don't know. It was just so kind of...
shoddily put together type of
thing. Kind of.
Has that feel.
Well, I mean, I'm not really a fan. Nothing against him, but I mean, I do like Antichrist. That was pretty good. And I liked Nymphomaniac, at least the first.
Baby die in Antichrist too? Doesn't it fall out a window at the beginning of the movie?
I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Which reminds me, I looked at Rosemary's Baby too. There actually was one. It was not a theatrical release. It was made for TV movie.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
It was released in 1976, and the only returning person from the actual film was Ruth Gordon.
Huh.
The old neighbor?
The old lady who actually, she was, I don't know whether she won or was only nominated, but she got a nod for supporting actress.
It's like the equivalent of a Sharknado sequel.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's just like no one, you know.
It was supposed to be just awful.
Yeah,
awful.
I can imagine.
So, but then the author, actually, the interesting thing about this is I was looking at this, the made-for-TV film, Son of Rosemary, I think it was called, something like that. Or, no, look what's happened to Rosemary's Baby. That's what the made-for-TV...
Great title.
That's what the made-for-TV film was called. And at the time, there was no source material. There wasn't a second book put out. But then later, the author of the original book, after the made-for-TV film, put out a book himself. A follow-up to the original book.
Interesting.
So, I don't know. Anyhow, it's all a mess. The second one was supposed to be just terrible.
Yeah. But Lars von Trier, yeah, I mean, I did like Nymphomaniac, at least the first part. His films, it's kind of hit and miss. Like, I can admire some of the style, but it just doesn't always do much for me.
Well, sometimes he feels like he's doing shocking things just to shock you.
Yeah. I mean, he's a filmmaker like Terrence Malick, where some people are going to love him, and other people are going to completely loathe him and call it pretentious.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's not. It's like with Gaspar Noé, the Argentinian director, where it's not even. I mean, it is. I guess you could say pretentious, but that's not what rubs me the wrong way. It's just like the extreme violence and how graphic his movies have to be because that's just how he grabs people's attention. And it's like
Rob Zombie almost.
Yeah, it's like he doesn't even have anything that interesting to say. It's like he's definitely a good filmmaker, but it's like at the end of the day,
why do you have to rely on these
exactly
sort of gimmicks?
Yeah, it feels like a gimmick. It just feels like a gimmick.
Sexuality,
and it's not even like he has one movie with a couple scenes. Like every single one of his movies, it's like, this is the one where we have real dicks in it, having real sex. Come on. And then, all his, other movies are just, insanely violent, but not...
What is Gaspar Noé? He did Love a couple years ago.
Gaspar Noé, he also did... Love. Well, yeah, well, I was referring... When I was just going on the rant, I was referring to Nymphomaniac and stuff. But Gaspar Noé did Enter the Void, Irreversible, Love.
Right.
Which, Enter the Void... It's cool on paper, but there's a lot of...
What can you say?
Yeah. But then Irreversible, there's just this horrible, horrible, horrible 11-minute rape scene.
The
camera is just trained.
Right.
And my brother's really into his movies and stuff, so I've watched a lot of them. But it's too much. And there's also one... I think it's
my thing.
I can't remember the name of it, but there's also this one where literally in the movie... I haven't seen this one. It's about an ex-cop or something. And literally in the movie... Before the scene happens, there's a warning that pops up on the screen. And then he, rapes his daughter.
Jesus Christ.
And kills her. And then that character is at the beginning of Irreversible talking about it. And I don't know. They're all just so disgusting. It's just
It
just airs on the side of smut. And just because you're implementing cool camera techniques doesn't mean you're making
that
anything.
It's like the trashiness, but it's without any...
Yeah,
what merit is it, or entertaining.
Yeah,
who's the Korean director? I'm trying to remember his name. Park Chan-wook did Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
And Stoker.
Those are.
There's some sort of salacious stuff in those, but it's he. He doesn't use that as
the
point of the film.
It's not like Old Boy is a great film.
There's some strange stuff. There's some strange stuff that goes on in it, but that's not the point of the film.
Yeah.
And there's some other really spectacular things that he does in the film. Yeah.
Like you could take away the hammer in the hallway scene or like the part where he cuts off his tongue, it would still be a great
film. And it'd still be a great film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But those are just used to accentuate sort of the descent into madness and the frayed psyche of these characters.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I mean, like an 11-minute long sexual assault scene. That's repugnant.
Yeah, and every single one of this dude's films, there's one too. It's like what like you were trying to draw blood from a stone at that point, and it wasn't even good to begin with. You know what I mean? It's like what. I don't know. And then Love, too, is just, like, them having, like, graphic sex
all the time. Yeah, I remember, when that one came out. Yeah, and there's all the press about that.
Yeah. Whatever.
But, yeah, I think I've only seen Love.
That's one of the few ones I haven't seen, I guess.
I don't know that I've seen any of them, and now I don't really want to see any
pass
of
them.
No Criterion releases of those? I don't think.
I saw a video of him in the Criterion closet, and he immediately went to 120 Days of Sodom and said, "Oh, this is a great movie. Of course, that the movie where people are literally eating shit is your favorite movie.
Great filmmaker that guy.
Who said that?
Gaspar Noé, the guy that did
the directors. Oh, 120 Days of Sodom.
Yeah.
When did that come out?
Salo? It's in the 60s.
It's a while back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's another one.
You want to retro review that?
We could have a whole conversation on
the
Paso Phillips of
I think I keep guy. I keep conflating, confusing Salo with Antichrist for some reason.
Mm. Very different. Yeah.
Antichrist is there's one scene near the end, I won't say it on live here, but it's like I can't unsee it. Not that it was like an ineffective scene, but it's just like
Do you know the guy from that directed Salo, Pasolini? He was killed by someone, ran him over with his own car and then smashed his junk. That's true. That's real. No, he was like an enemy of the state. Like he was
really?
Yeah, he was like
openly, Pasolini?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I was on his Wikipedia page the other night. Phillip's a fan of him. Because he's also like a critical thinker and stuff like that and has all his stuff published. And I don't think film was his primary focus, but people love Salo. I don't want to watch it. I think it's a little too much for me.
Just a bit. So,
sorry. Well, enough about genital mutilation.
We went to some dark stuff
We went down some really strange hallways there.
If Chloe was here, we would have been able to cut it off real quick.
Us boys being boys.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry about that. So the other trailer we can talk about is Bohemian Rhapsody, which is the upcoming Freddie Mercury / Queen biopic with Rami Malek, and it was going to be directed by Bryan Singer, but then he had to depart, or he was fired, not really sure.
Probably a little both.
Yeah, something like that.
If he hadn't left, they probably would have dumped him.
Yeah.
It's just a question of which came first.
But what did y'all think? Do y'all like Queen at all?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as much as anyone else. I grew up listening to Queen, but I never...
There are definitely some good hits.
Yeah. But at this point, it's kind of overwrought. You know, it's like when I hear Bohemian Rhapsody coming around, I'm going to change it. It's like,
that's the thing is I grew up, 90s, the era of Mike Myers and Wayne's World, and it was just everywhere, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
I got to say.
Yeah.
You know, their other stuff is fun. But I mean, it's like bubblegum pop music.
Yeah, it's like the same way I listen to like ABBA. You know, it's like it's not bad. I mean, I'm not.
No, it's not bad. I mean, the songwriting's spectacular, and the musicianship, Brian May, is outstanding. I mean, the whole band was really quite good, and they did some sort of groundbreaking stuff for the time. Post disco, early arena rock.
I mean, just the kind of operatic nature or style of Bohemian Rhapsody definitely has had an impact for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think someone, I don't know if it was someone involved or someone outside of the project, at least yesterday, called out the film or at least the trailer for not showing his side of sexuality or anything dealing with that.
This is a teaser trailer. I mean, it was
I don't know if the film delves into that or not.
I'm sure. I mean, especially just considering his death, like how could you just ignore yeah. sexuality.
Yeah, and so I'm hoping it does. I'm sure it will. But yeah. I mean, it looks pretty entertaining. You know, it'd be a cool one to watch.
The issue, so he definitely looks like Freddie Mercury. Like, they got the look. But something is up with, it looks like, I mean, you can tell he's wearing, like, fake teeth. Yeah. And it really, I don't know about this. Like,
yeah.
And I guess, like, with these biopics and stuff, they're never going to look just like him. But, they're like, he looks like a character of Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, I mean, it makes the point of, like, I wish, or the argument of, I wish they would do more films like Steve Jobs with Michael Fassbender.
Yeah.
Where he doesn't have to look like him at all.
Yeah.
But he can still play the character.
Yeah.
So well. Yeah.
I feel like no one ever talks about
that. Yeah, I mean, it didn't get, like, any Oscar noms or anything. So, yeah, it got completely overlooked. Yeah, so that one comes out in November, I believe. Don't know if it's going to be an Oscar film or not, but maybe keep an eye out for it, especially if you like Queen.
Yeah.
Well,
I think the degree to which it's potential Oscar bait, I think, deals with some of the social issues.
Yeah.
That. The thing is, it doesn't touch on that at all in the trailer. The trailer just looks like garbage. Like, that film I would not see. I'm sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't. It's, I'm Freddie Mercury. Nobody gets my music. I want to put a big 6-minute opera thing in here and nobody understands my music. I mean, that's boring. I've seen that hundreds of times over. Who gives a shit?
They do like a Love and Mercy type of thing.
Cool. I mean, but yeah, Love and Mercy was outstanding because it was, you know, it wasn't necessarily, it was in part the creative process of the musician, but that wasn't the focal point. The focal point was his struggle with his mental illness. And if you've got Freddie Mercury dealing with the prejudice against his sexuality and how that was pertinent to it, and you did something more along the lines of Milk, that would be fascinating.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, Milk, obviously, it was the political aspect of it, but the degree, the extent to which the not the villainization, but the something like that. I don't know what the prejudice against his sexuality and how that played into his political activity, you know, and obviously that's important. But I mean, again, it's how these things meet, how they converge.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the one, it's not just the other, it's the combination of the two and how that affected the person.
Yeah, I'm hoping it doesn't turn out like Jersey Boys, the Clint Eastwood movie. if it's that, then I'm out.
I completely forgot he did that. Yeah. That's another one to throw in the Eastwood rubbish bin.
Yeah. Maybe keep an eye out for those. Any other news y'all want to mention before we move on?
I already brought it up, but yeah, the Terrence Malick stuff, because I saw that. And I was like,
The Tree of Life?
No, sorry, not Terrence Malick. Oh, that is an interesting thing to bring up.
I still like Thin Red Line.
And Lars von
Trier. Oh, it's good. Oh, yeah, it's good. Thin Red
Line is spectacular.
Seen it, but I really want to.
I have it on Blu-ray if you want.
Really?
Yeah. It's on. Yeah, like all of his films now, along with Tree of Life.
I need to see Badlands.
Oh, it's good.
I need to give him a chance.
That's his, like, least
but
Terrence Malick-y movie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the last one he did.
The
Song of Song?
Song of Song. It was supposed to be just terrible.
I didn't. I mean, I thought it was all right.
Really?
I mean, I'm a big Terrence Malick fan, so maybe I.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely not amazing, but it's okay.
I need to give him a chance because I've only saw Tree of Life and the.
I need to see.
And Tree the of situation Life. Which I saw it in definitely was not conducive to enjoying that movie.
And The New World is very good as well with Colin Farrell.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. About discovering America and everything. That's very interesting.
Take place in North Carolina.
Yep.
Damn.
Hillsboro.
Yeah, right here. In my backyard.
Yeah.
But I meant to say Lars von Trier, but Tree of Life is getting a even longer cut.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah. Is it 50 more minutes, he said?
I think it's like 30, maybe.
It needs more time.
Apparently.
I hope so. But what's this shoot? I completely lost my train of thought. I wish it would include that Voyage of Time documentary he did that premiered at the Toronto Film Festival last year, it's about kind of nature and life and everything. But it hasn't gotten like any theatrical release, so I hope it does.
Yeah. Is it just nature shots with someone narrating it, or I mean,
it's a very surreal type thing, but I'm curious to see it. Anyhow, I guess we can move on to some listener mail. So the filmbudspodcast@gmail.com is the address that you can reach us. Also on Twitter @FilmBuds and on Facebook as well. So please follow us one way or the other if you would like, and we'd Love hearing from anyone. Let's see what we got here. So the first one we got is from Aaron in San Antonio. Says, hi, buds of film. What do you think of the criticism by directors saying Netflix is a bad thing for most filmmakers and or movies? Do you think it's a losing or winning game for them if a movie lands on Netflix instead of getting a wide theatrical release? Love the show, Aaron.
That's a tough call.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Spielberg has made a point and said that's like a, it's not a good thing if they get their movie put on Netflix instead of theatrical release.
Well, I've yet to see a feature length film that was originally put on Netflix that is of the caliber of like a.
Well, I mean, because
I need to watch Mudbound, but Mudbound is supposed to be quite good.
Oh, it's
and
good.
The director of photography that did that went on to do Black Panther.
Yeah. Yeah, that obviously got a lot of nominations.
She's a remarkably good cinematographer, yeah. And Mudbound's supposed to be.
Yeah.
The true test, film. I think, is going to be The Irishman this year, Martin Scorsese's film.
Is it going straight to Netflix?
It's going to be put on Netflix.
Because, I mean, most of the films that I've seen on Netflix, I'm sorry, but they've been horrible. Yeah, Bright was garbage. Mute was garbage.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of some of the other feature-length films. The other one about the Devil's Son, the one Adam Scott.
Oh, little
devil, little evil,
people. Little Nicky.
Yeah,
something like little evil or something.
Little
like that.
Wait, what is that movie with Adam Sandler from Little Nicky? Remember that one?
Oh, Little Nicky. Yeah,
that movie's so bad. Yeah.
Well, that's another one. Netflix, all these friggin' Adam Sandler things.
That oh yeah, out. God, yeah,
they're
yeah.
all garbage.
Yeah, I mean, I think the
Meyerowitz stories were.
Oh, that wasn't even part of his contract.
They were okay.
That was
That was Baumbach, and I guess he likes working with Noah Baumbach. But I mean, that Meyerowitz stories were okay.
That's one I did like a lot.
But. They weren't terrible, but it wasn't outstanding. Yeah. I don't know that working on Netflix is necessarily a kiss of death. It's just some reason the standards that they seem to have. I don't know whether it's a budgetary thing.
It just seems like they need more. Producers who know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're just like, here, you can have whatever creative control you want. Do whatever you want.
One thing, I do like the idea of Netflix being this platform for films that maybe wouldn't get the attention of the big
definitely.
Studios. So like, if it can be this platform for you to put out a quality film and you have tons of creative control over it, I'm all for it. Have we seen that necessarily yet? No. Other than like Mudbound, which apparently people say is good. But
Beasts of No Nation is a good one.
Beasts of No Nation, yes, that's supposed to be spectacular as well.
But I'm definitely for it, just because you know it's as much as we can break away from, and there's plenty of quality films in the great, you know, big production houses in Hollywood and stuff like that. Like you know, but at the same time, like the opening of more avenues for people to release films, I'm for.
Yeah.
I don't think, as long as I'm still getting physical releases for the movies that I like, mm-hmm. as long as I can still get my, you know, nice collector's editions and stuff like that, I'm happy.
I mean, but yeah, the interesting will be, because The Irishman, they just had a recent, like, press with Scorsese, and he said there are 300 scenes in it. So it's going to be like, and so, like, this is going to be a, like, huge crime film that's apparently, like, the budget was, like, 140 million or something. Like it seemed like every week the budget keeps on going up, and so that's going to be an interesting.
I mean,
one.
How is Netflix putting out the films with budgets like?
I don't know. That they're I don't know.
Up or we're losing money like crazy.
We're $20 billion in debt here.
Well, you know? Yeah. Right as I was leaving the house, my roommate was watching Silicon Valley, and there's a guy like yelling at the guys that are making the app or whatever. They're like, every great business is losing money. You cannot be making money.
Yeah.
Like, look at Amazon. Yeah. They haven't made money in years, but somehow Jeff Bezos is a fucking billionaire.
Yeah. So that one, especially with his name attached, it's like, is that going to get the normal audience that it would get for a theatrical release? Because, if you look at Silence, that's something that would be much better for Netflix than...
Yeah.
For,
can't see Silence doing well in theaters.
It didn't. Yeah, and went completely underlooked overlooked.
One thing, though, that does worry me about it, if this does become a thing and more films are put out on Netflix and that just becomes the norm, I'll be sad because I personally like going to the theaters. Like, I like the experience of going to the movies. But I know tons of people that will be like, nah, I didn't want to go to the movie. I didn't want to spend the $10 or whatever. Whereas, like, me personally, if I want to see a movie, $10 for a movie is a fair price. I won't question it.
Yeah. There are certain
but
films.
But I know plenty of people that would see a movie and be like, yeah, I want to see it, but I just didn't want to spend the money, you know?
Yeah.
See, there are certain films that I think absolutely need to be seen in a theater. Like, the Avengers films absolutely need to be seen in a theater, but then there are certain other films that aren't even, you know, extravaganzas, that sort of thing, that should be seen in a theater.
Yeah.
You Were Never Really Here.
Yeah.
Honestly, I thought seen in a theater.
Visuals, that's what I was literally about. I was just about to say.
The sound. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Maybe cool,
just the way that everything is shot and framed.
Yeah.
Would have been remarkable. I've only seen it on my TV at home.
Yeah.
But it would be remarkable to see in a theater. To get
Annihilation. The cinematography. That was
to see. Annihilation has to be seen in a theater.
Dunkirk.
So there are certain things that have to be seen in a theater. That being said, there are certain films that don't necessarily need to be seen in a theater, but it enhances the... Totally, I didn't need to see in a theater.
No.
That doesn't mean it's any less of a film.
Yeah.
It's a film. It's a good film.
But
it...
When a key tenet of the film is its production quality. Yes. You know, you want to see it.
So I think certain things need to be absolutely done a theatrical release.
Yeah.
What Netflix has done, which I think is spectacular, is it's locked down a lot of really excellent documentaries. Which documentaries you don't need to see in theaters.
Yeah.
I like watching, me personally, I love documentaries and I like watching them in theaters. I will say that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that documentaries should just port wholesale over to Netflix. I don't think that's the case. But
you don't need to watch Chef's Table on, you know, on the big screen. Even though I would.
I would. I absolutely would.
Yeah. Marathon.
So I mean there are documentaries don't necessarily, because it's not meant to be a sort of visual extravaganza, and cinematography is, you know, production, set design, cinematography, visuals, all those kinds of things are not the bread and butter. It's the story and how the story is told.
Yeah.
That I think works really well. I mean, Netflix has some absolutely outstanding documentaries. What Happened to Miss Simone, The 13th.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, some of the sort of stories that they have. I'm watching one right now, Evil Genius, which...
I heard that was, really good.
It's really good. I think Netflix should be a platform for new directors to sort of get their name out there. That being
said,
who is it? The director of Bright?
David Ayer.
David Ayer, thank you. That was upsetting.
Your favorite film of the year, right?
That was upsetting. Because, I mean, he did, you know, Fury was so remarkable.
End of Watch as well.
And, End of Watch, right? Which is on Netflix. But End of Watch. And then he goes and makes Bright. Who said, this is a good idea?
Well, I mean,
Let's do this.
Well, I like the concept. It's just the execution.
I like the concept again. It's just the first 10 or 15 minutes I thought were... Yeah, but then the story just devolves into, like, crass action flick.
Yeah.
Whereas Fury, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, that could have been come out in the theater. It would have had the same effect, wouldn't you say? It's not necessarily Netflix's fault.
No. I don't know that it's Netflix's fault, but where in the chain of command was it decided, let's make the movie this way. Let's give the ability to go with. Why didn't somebody say to him, okay, this first 10, 15 minutes, this is great. But you need to redo the entire last hour, 45 minutes of the film because it's garbage.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll see.
Know that Netflix is a kiss of death for directors. Yeah.
No.
That being said, generally the quality of films being put out on Netflix has been subpar. And so even if a director's film is good and they put it out on Netflix, there is a certain... what is the word I'm looking for? Prejudice or predisposition.
I think that films through Netflix are going to take the role of the made-for-TV films. There are plenty of good... I'll talk about it on what I've been watching recently, because I've been watching something that originally aired on syndicated television. And it's great. There are plenty of like good movies that came directly to TV, but the vast majority are
just shit. Awful. Yeah,
terrible. So I think that you might have to wait to the crowd for Netflix stuff, but we'll see. I think it could be different. I mean, it is an evolving platform. So
yeah, there are. I mean, it's ubiquitous now. I mean, you know, $10 a month.
Yeah. I mean, no one has cable because of Netflix.
Yeah. I mean, there is some good stuff, but you do have to weed through a lot of crap.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crap on there.
Sounds like all the movies we see in theaters, too.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. There's a lot of shit in theaters.
So. Yeah.
There's a lot of garbage out there.
Summer's coming, guys. Summer's coming.
Summer's here.
Yeah.
I mean, well, we hit the blockbuster season.
Yeah.
And, you know. Oh, that was one thing I wanted to say when we did the Avengers Infinity War, which I thought was kind of weird. What does it say about our filmmaking in our day and age that I go to the theater, watch Avengers Infinity War, and across the lobby, Black Panther is still playing?
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Was it?
How weird.
Yeah.
Huh. Like every movie theater in America is still playing Black Panther.
Yeah.
It's
Marvel and Disney, man. They're taking over.
But, well, you know, their quality hasn't plummeted.
Well, that's the thing.
If anything, I think they're getting better. They're getting better, I think.
The quality of their films has been generally pretty good. There are some lapses here and there. I still didn't like the major fight scene between Black Panther and Killmonger in Black Panther. All the flippy loopy doo CG camera stuff was not really my thing. But that's more like a personal aesthetics issue. But, I mean, the rest of the film was outstanding up until that bit. Anyhow, Black Panther is hugely popular, and now, you know, let's see how long Avengers Infinity War hangs out in the theaters. It's been, what, 3 weeks now?
It's going to be like all summer, probably.
I mean, it just became the fifth highest grossing movie of all time.
Yeah.
So and the highest grossing superhero film. So
yeah. They're fun to watch. I don't begrudge anything. They're fun to watch. It's just funny when you go to the theater and you're, do I want to watch the brand new Avengers? You want to go see Black Panther, which has been out for 6 weeks now. You know?
Yeah.
And he's already in it.
He's already, there he is again. Yeah. Hey, it's...
In a way, I think it's kind of cool, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's kind of fun, but...
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the email. All right. I guess we just do our picks of the week, I guess, since y'all have, or at least you have
a
good few things. Oh, yeah, but the filmbudspodcast@gmail.com, just to reiterate, you can contact us there. Send us any questions or comments you have. And so, I mean, I just have a couple of things. I was telling Cooper about it a few days ago. I was just bored, and for some reason I had the Blu-ray. I don't know why. Got it like a year or two ago. But I watched The Lords of Salem, which is the Rob Zombie movie from a few years ago.
One of his slasher grindhouse.
His second most recent film. I was just like, you know, I'm going to watch something strange, you know, something I haven't really seen many of his films before. I would say maybe at best it's 3 out of 5, but it's probably, at least of the films I've seen, it's probably the best, which isn't saying much.
Hmm.
But follows these three radio gothic clown DJs.
Oh, God. Insane clown
like,
posse style.
Yeah, you should look up the design, like on Google
it's
Images.
It's like Insane Clown Posse, right?
They have like these blonde dread...
Juggalos.
Dreads, kind of like Kiss band paint, and...
Why do you do this to yourself?
I was curious, you know? I like taking a risk here and there, but they get this...
Oh, my God, they look so fucking stupid.
look. Yeah.
Jesus Christ,
pretty awful.
Yeah But there are these DJs who all the banter between them is just brutal. It's just like the most lame, like unfunny, like stereotypical radio DJ stuff or banter, which doesn't all mesh with their look. Like, you would think these guys would be like dark, cynical, like, but they're just these regular radio DJs, or at least how they sound. But they get this unknown music in the mail and they play it, and then it starts to affect things in the world. God. It's kind of like the fog in a way. You know, the John Carpenter movie where the fog rolls in and the pirates come. And it was, the opening scene is just the thing that I hate about Rob Zombie. And actually, I know we talk about him a lot, but he's like the horror genre's version of Michael Bay. All his films are like unnecessarily obnoxious.
Yeah, because he's so lame. He's just lame. There's no other way of putting it.
The humor is so present and also just so unfunny and dated. And also with Rob Zombie, you have violence. And then with Michael Bay, you have action. All of his films are just mind-numbing due to their content. And there's a witch being, I won't go into too much detail, but having a baby cut out of her. And then them spitting on it.
Come on.
Yeah, it's like what we were talking about with what's his name?
Gaspar Noé.
Yeah, where it's just like, what are you doing, Rob?
Well, why?
Rob, why, man?
What are you trying to prove?
Yeah.
Take that, Mom and Dad.
Yeah.
You make a bad movie.
Yeah. It's just like that stuff where you just, I just can't wrap my head around as to why it's there. And also, because, I mean, and also with Rob, and actually with Michael Bay as well, all of his characters are at like 11 all the time in terms of energy. And so they're always screaming, they're always yelling. And Michael Bay, you have all the characters in Transformers who are just like yelling and yelling at each other. And it's just so tiring.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of visually, the film is okay. It's actually probably his best looking movie in terms of cinematography. And I mean, there are a few moments here and there. And the concept of these three like gothic clown DJs is at least somewhat interesting. But everything else, and
I mean,
where he draws inspiration from is just so shallow. Also, like, it's just so obvious where he's drawing his inspiration from. And it's just like,
so you say the phrase gothic clown DJs, and I just immediately.
But see, I mean, clearly, my mind is blown. Yeah. Oh my god!
My question is, why are they putting on all this makeup and all this shit if they're just radio DJs and no one sees
them? Right? Nobody sees them anyway, so it's not as though...
You guys don't realize it, but all three of us right now are wearing face paint.
Yeah, we all have dreads.
We do this every week.
I'm
wearing a leather trench coat.
We're wearing like Tim Burton-esque clothes.
Yeah, I've got a black duster on and my leather pants.
We look like Edward Scissorhands right now.
I dress exclusively at Hot Topic.
Yeah. God. Yeah, and so it's...
We've got merch. It's all Hot Topic.
Yeah, and so it's by no means probably a film I won't ever watch again, but it was at least...
Sell that blue, dude. Yeah. Sell that blue.
Yeah, it'll be on my shelf for a while until I know what to do with it, but it's okay. I mean, I know there are big Rob Zombie fans out there, just I guess in the way they're Eli Roth fans, who it's kind of a guilty pleasure or whatever, but it's okay. There's stuff in it I hate, but it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. It's just, all right, Rob.
I mean, I don't get it. I mean, they have scenes like that. We're talking about Gaspar Noé and some of these directors who put these remarkably graphic, shocking scenes in their films. And it's kind of like, look at me. Am I edgy enough yet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that's all they have to put on the table.
Lynn Ramsey.
Who did You Were Never Really Here.
Her films. She is edgy. That's edgy.
Yeah, but it's like tastefully done.
But it's
and it advances the story. Pieces
of filmmaking. Because it's edgy, not because it's like, ah, now we're going to cut the baby out and spit on it and then we're going to eat the baby and then we're going to rape the witch. It's like, I mean, that's just...
Eat the baby.
Yeah. And
I mean, why?
And I know that, of course, on the show, Mother is very divisive. But just the stuff in that, at least that film has, at least it's attempting to tackle interesting ideas. Whereas in something like with Rob Zombie, it's purely just...
Shock factor,
violence, and it's very exploitative. And
I mean, I guess that's what he's going for. It's supposed to be a throwback to some of his grindhouse stuff.
But his films aren't nearly as fun as those early.
Yeah,
where it's goofy in a way that it's dated in a way that's charming. Whereas in this, it's just like, ugh, this is just mind numbing.
Yeah,
dumb. Stupid.
Yeah. I don't know. Does he have... I guess the big question is, what sort of self-awareness does he have of the schlock that he's making? Because
I don't know if there's that much.
Yeah, he probably thinks it's sick.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, but also, and also in terms of how his characters look, they all the male characters look like him. They all have this long, like, death metal band hair.
Right.
They're all, like... Scruffy facial hair.
Which is funny because like anyone that like listens to that type of music just knows that Rob Zombie is so lame. Who he's aspiring to be like, everyone, like he's like the kid on the playground that like is trying to like fit in with the other group of kids and is just doing it so poorly.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel bad for him.
So I haven't seen his most recent one, 31, and I haven't seen a few of his earlier ones, but this one's at least not saying much, but it's fine. check that.
I didn't have a seizure while watching it.
Yeah, I did kind of nod off once or twice or go get food while I was playing. But then just the other thing I watched is I rewatched The Post on 4K and liked it slightly more. Still don't love it. I think it's maybe on par with maybe War Horse for Spielberg's movie. Still, while it's very, I got the timeliness of it much more on this viewing. And so it's very timely.
Well, I mean, the issues of freedom of press and the legitimacy of the press.
Yeah, exactly.
In the era of fake news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So. But otherwise, it does feel at times a little shallow and kind of just very feel-good, crowd-pleasing Oscar bait in a way.
Yeah.
Or the Spielberg version of that.
Well, that's the thing. That's what bothered me is I thought the story was overall spectacular, was interesting, and he treated it in a good manner, but there were some pretty, give me an Oscar sort of shots.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with War Horse where it's PG-13, but it's trying to show you World War One. Mm-hmm. It's like the Hollywood version of World War One.
Well, that's a shame after, I mean, because Saving Private
Ryan. Exactly, yeah, that was just about to say that, yeah. But it's and I did like Meryl Streep a lot. She's yeah. very good in it.
It's good. It's not Saving Private Ryan. Mm-hmm. It's not Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
But it's still, I thought, a very, very well done film. I was actually surprised at how good it was. You know, I was never a huge Spielberg fan, but, you know, he keeps putting out films like this. And Saving Private Ryan and then Bridge of Spies was really outstanding.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Lincoln.
And I mean, I still like that BFG, Adventures of Tintin, probably more than this mm-hmm. overall, but still solid. But yeah, I think that's it for me. Cooper?
Cool. So I was referencing it earlier, but I'm slowly making my way through the Decalogue. I don't know. Have I talked to you?
You've talked to me about it.
But. Yeah. This Polish director, Krzysztof Kieślowski, made this 10-part miniseries. Each episode's an hour long. And each episode is loosely based around one of the commandments or multiple commandments. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of it has to just do with morality. And it all takes place in this apartment complex in Poland in the 80s. And it was made in the 80s. And it's taken me a minute to get through them just because all of them are really like emotionally draining. Short little films, but like, and there's also so much to like unpack with them that it really wouldn't do it justice to sit down and watch all of them in a row.
Where did you find this?
It's Criterion.
Oh, it's a Criterion.
Yeah, yeah, I have a.
Because yeah. I mean, his other films, Red, White, Blue.
Yeah.
I don't know about The Double Life of Veronique, but
Marco loves that one.
It's quite good. I saw that way back in the early days of the Chelsea.
Yeah.
I also said Red, White, and Blue when they came out, theatrical release, and they yeah. were really good as well.
Yeah, but like this is the same quality as those films. Like mm-hmm. you would never be able to tell that this aired on TV. Huh. But anyway, so there's 10 of them, and the fifth one, sixth one, were edited down to an hour to put into the miniseries and put into TV, but they also did theatrical releases for the fifth and sixth one. They're about an hour and 30 minutes. The fifth one is a short film about killing, and then the sixth one is a short film about love. And I just watched that one, and it's about this like 22-year-old boy who's kind of just works at a post office and really doesn't have much going on in his life. And every night he comes home and has this little telescope, and he looks out the telescope and watches this woman through her window, like sleep with like a new guy every night. Like she's this type of person that just brings home lots right. of men, and he kind of just watches that unfold. But then you like realize that he's not even really watching her have sex. It's more he is so lonely that he's just connected with this woman, just like watching her do everyday things, like, you know, get her mail and just walk around the house. And it is creepy. I mean, he is stalking this woman, but it kind of develops in a way that you wouldn't expect. And it is, turns out it's a pretty like beautiful piece, I think. I'm still thinking about it a lot. But yeah, check that out. It's if you are into that type of stuff, I know Criterion is having a sale. The box set for the full Decalogue is about $100, but you can get it in half off Barnes & Noble in July, I think, is when it starts. So if you're into, you know, and it feels very like Eastern European. Like it is yeah. very like in terms of like the colors, like it is very dull.
It's like austere.
That yes, kind of, yes, yeah. yes, yes, yes. That's a good way of putting it. It does speak leagues about his Kieslowski's ability to make an interesting and engaging film using that like very bland and very muted yeah. setting and palette. He can make these like beautiful films.
Yeah,
and each of the 10 films has a different cinematographer, which is really cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he directs all of them, and him and this other man co-wrote all of them, but he hires a different cinematographer for each. And sometimes it doesn't really make a difference, but especially the fifth one, a short film about killing, the color, like it is like, it's about this guy that strangles a person just randomly. In the whole film, they apply this like disgusting, like putrid yellow filter over mm-hmm. it during like just certain scenes, and it's just so nasty looking, but it works really well.
It's kind of like the Denis Villeneuve's Enemy. It has this kind of jaundiced yellow.
Yeah. It's exactly like that. Where at first I thought the colors were wrong on my TV, but it's
or like Natural Born Killers, where it's all these red, blue.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Soderbergh and Traffic.
Yeah, definitely. That's what
But anyway, you guys should definitely check them out. They're also, if anyone is listening, has Filmstruck, the streaming service, they're all on there. So watch those. The first one is really good. So just start with that. And you can kind of jump around from there. But I recommend starting with Decalogue 1 just because I think it's maybe the most engrossing from the outset. Mm. But so I've been watching those. And then I also watched, I'd never seen his movies before, but I know a lot of people talk about him, but Rainer Werner Fassbinder, I think that's how you pronounce the first two names, but super prolific, like German new wave director. He died really early, like in his late 30s, but made like 30 plus films. And a lot of them, I from my understanding, there's probably some duds in there, but there's a lot of like critically acclaimed stuff that he's done. And I watched one called The Merchant of Four Seasons, and it's unlike anything I've ever seen before, just in the way that it's shot and just the way that it tells its story. It's kind of one of those movies that it seems like it's going one way and then just kind of goes a different way. Like halfway through, it just completely changes pace and stuff. So if you're interested in like new wave cinema, definitely check that out. Check him out. But yeah, it's pretty good. I liked it a lot. Watch that one.
Yeah, I would like to. Braden?
Really, the only new thing I've been watching is Evil Genius. Sort of one of those multi-part true crime stories.
Like the Netflix binge.
On Netflix, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's only, oddly enough, there's only 4 episodes to it. So it's relatively short. I've already watched 2 of them. I watched 2 of them last night. But it's the story, the crime is so strange. The story surrounding it, the people surrounding it are so strange. It's really compelling and interesting to watch.
It's about a bank robber, right?
It's sort of. It's about a guy who robs a bank. He's essentially coerced into robbing a bank. A bomb is strapped around his neck and he's coerced into robbing a bank. And then there's a series of other murders that occur afterwards, and then somebody reports on this woman, Marjorie Deal Armstrong. And the guy's saying, you know, I've got a body in my freezer at my house and I put it there because this woman told me to. Hmm. I mean, it's just this weird spiral of events that occur, and everybody who's involved in this is just so well, the suspects at least I should say are just so bizarre. But I've watched the first 2 parts of the 4-part series, and so far it's really compelling, it's really interesting, and it's the interviews that they have with everybody that, you know, from the FBI, the ATF, the state police. This occurred in Erie, Pennsylvania, the state police, the local police, and it goes through in an interview process with all these people. And this happened just recently. Hmm. And this is 2003.
Huh.
And it apparently got a lot of international press. I think here in the United States, it may not have received as much because we were still, first of all, reeling from September 11th.
Yeah.
Because this was only about 2 years after September 11th. But then we were also involved, I believe, in the Iraq War at the time.
Yeah, that was just starting up.
Yeah, I can't remember whether this immediately preceded or just followed the Iraq War, but either way, the news cycle would not have focused on
just got on lost
this.
In the shuffle.
Yeah, because I think that would have been something that I remember.
Yeah, definitely.
But, I mean, obviously, the American psyche was still reeling from September 11th, and then the Iraq War was just moving into, you know, all either the case for that was being built or it had just started prosecution of that war. And so
Americans had a few other things on their mind.
Yeah.
This crime, apparently, I mean, they had news clips from places in Europe. They had a news clip from Japanese television about this. Whoa. Just because it was such a strange thing. I mean, it sounds like a made-up story. It's not just the fact that this guy had this bomb strapped to his chest, locked to him with a collar.
Saw style.
I mean,
yeah. It's like some shit you'd see.
Yeah. But, or it's almost like in The Hurt Locker. That scene in The Hurt Locker where the guy near the end. They've strapped this guy to, yeah.
Well, I mean, you hear about that in various places. Iraq, I know that was going on for a while.
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
Afghanistan, they had issues like that where people would be unwilling victims unwilling carriers, I guess I should say, of IEDs.
Yeah.
But not only was it the fact that this guy had this bomb strapped to him and then he was forced to go rob a bank carrying with him, of all things, a cane gun. Seriously.
Huh.
It was just like, a cane with a little mechanism in it so they could fire a one shot.
What the fuck?
Right? But then this guy was somehow, he was following a series of clues like a scavenger hunt. And it said, go out to the McDonald's down the road and look under the rock and there will be a note. And then you take the note and then you follow the note and then it will lead you to this parking lot. And then in the parking lot will be strapped to the bottom of the mailbox will be a key and all this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. right? And so the whole point to him doing the scavenger hunt was he was ultimately supposed to find the keys that would unlock this collar so he could get the bomb off.
Yeah.
Only after robbing the bank, getting the money, dropping the money off somewhere, and then following a series of notes from that point on to get these keys. And so the whole thing, just really weird.
Yeah.
And
pretty sadistic, too.
Yeah. I mean, it was all very, very strange.
It's four episodes of it.
It's four episodes. About an hour piece. A little under an hour piece.
I heard about it, and I would really like to watch that, so.
It's interesting. It's done by the DuPlass brothers.
Oh, really?
And Tully.
Yeah, one of them was in Tully. Interesting. Who are they?
Exactly? They're coming up in prominence.
Well, I mean, so, they make a lot of low-budget horror movies, right?
Mark and Jay
DuPlass. No, they do the...
They did...
The comedy.
So they did a movie, or they did a short-lived series on HBO. It's two seasons. They're just on NPR the other day, so. A short-lived series called Togetherness, where they co-wrote and directed it. And then Mark Duplass was in The League. And then I'm trying to think. Jay Duplass is now starring in a show right now. I'm not sure what show it is. He might be in this. I don't know. Or might be affiliated.
Well, no, they executive produce. They did the Creep movies. They also did Wild Wild Country, that Netflix movie about the Indian cult. And then
I've been kind of wanting to watch that as well. That sounds
peculiar. And they executive produced the Skeleton Twins, that comedy with Kristen Wiig
They produce
almost like a Blumhouse productions. They do kind of like a lot of these low budget mm-hmm. genre films. Mm. But and this apparently, which is cool. So,
there you go.
Yeah. But that's on Netflix now. If you want to see it, I'm trying to think if there was anything else because I guess we had 2 weeks of stuff, but I haven't really been watching much.
Yeah, I haven't been watching. I'm just upset that two of my favorite shows, Ash vs. Evil Dead and The Expanse, have both been canceled. 3 seasons. And
oh yeah. Dead.
So that's unsettling.
Yeah, a lot of shows recently got the
axe. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of robberies, did y'all see that video? I mean, it was months ago of these two. I think it was in China or Japan, of these two like teenage people trying to rob a place.
I think you showed it to me.
No, yeah. Okay. I can't remember the exact what nation it was in, but at night, these two. I guess it was two, like teenage maybe. People like Coopers and my age both have hoods on, and they were trying to get this door or lever open, and one of them, it goes up to the building, and the other one has like a rock or something really heavy, and he tries to throw it at the the structure to break it, and he ends up hitting the other one in the head. And this was all captured on like security camera. Yeah. And it makes the other one go unconscious when he gets hit. And there's the video is just him dragging his friend away around the corner. And the whole time it was done, they released it through CNN. And they had this really funny music playing, like do-do-do-do-do. And it's like you just see this guy chuck this heavy object and this guy just get plastered by this. And he goes unconscious and he has to drag him away. If you haven't seen it, it's golden YouTube comedy video.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did they catch these guys?
I don't know. I mean, because they were both in hoods, and they were. It was at night, yeah. And so it's kind of. Well, I mean, but it was captured on a camera, and these guys
were actually trying to rob a bank.
Yeah, it wasn't a bank. It was some store, and so they no robbery or even any harm was done to the building. It looks like it was just two guys were so stupid.
Wow. Yeah.
But check it out if you need a laugh.
God.
But yeah, so I guess that's about it for what we had this week. So I guess next week, Deadpool 2, unfortunately.
Yeah. I'll probably watch it.
Yeah.
I didn't really like the first one all that much, but...
Yeah. Of course, Cooper, you're always welcome back if you want to see it. And I'm not sure what we'll do for a retro review. I mean, we could do the first Deadpool, but that'd just be kind of repetitive.
Logan. I haven't seen Logan.
Oh, yeah, and neither has Chloe. We'll figure something out for next week, but I think more than likely Deadpool 2... And our schedule should be at least somewhat back to normal. So
I don't really know much else that's coming out this week.
Yeah.
I mean, there's good Lord, it's all biopics at the Chelsea, which there's some good biopics. There's the Pope Francis film, the RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg film.
Yeah,
you know, I kind of want to see both.
So yeah, and hopefully, you know, our schedules are still probably going to be a little all over the place, but we should be able to record maybe on Tuesday or Wednesday, like we usually do. And sorry again about not having the show last week. Wasn't our intention, but it happens. Well, guys, anything y'all want to mention before we wrap up? Cooper, nope. You've got head on to Joe nope. Van Gogh, right?
No, yeah, I got work here now. I'm going to stop and get a McGriddle on the
ground. Oh, yeah.
On the way there.
Yeah, yeah.
Get a McGriddle, man.
They still make those things?
Oh, yeah. Guys, thanks as always.
Yeah.
It's always a fun time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Chloe should be back next week. But until next time, we'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Mamma mia, mamma mia,
mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me.